people on her way there, and that if I put myself in the window of the cafe and my street corner, I'd be able to see her when she passed by. So whenever I wasn't teaching, I'd be there, in the cafe, on the corner, looking for a glimpse of that waterfall of gold hair. And you know, Floyd, I swear that was all I wanted. I just wanted to see her. But for some reason that day, I found myself rising from my chair. There she was, standing between two parked cars, waiting to cross the road. Her blonde hair was tied back and hidden somehow inside her hood or the back of her jacket, and I just wanted her to see me, to acknowledge me in some way. And I approached her, and there it was, like a punch to the gut. Jesus Christ. She doesn't know me. Not for the first second or two. I watched the memory slot into place like a slide in one of those carousels from the olden days. And then, of course, she was all smiles and kindness. But it was too late. She had completely failed to verify my existence. If only she had known, Floyd. If only she had known how much I'd needed her to do that. Then maybe none of it would have happened. Maybe Ellie Mac would have gone to the library, got to sit all her GCSEs, got to marry Theo, got to live her life. But, unfortunately, that's not the way it worked out. Chapter 34. Poppy serves dinner for Floyd and Laurel on Friday night. She lights candles, wraps a bottle of wine in a linen napkin, and pours it from the base, like a sommelier. She doesn't eat with them because that would ruin the role play, merely hovers at a discreet distance, clears the table between courses, asks how their food is. Her hair, Laurel notices, is in a topknot, rather than the more formal hairdos she normally favours, and she has a tea towel tied around her waist in an approximation of a waiter's apron. She looks very grown up, very pretty, more like Ellie than ever. Laurel can barely tear her eyes from her. She makes love to Floyd that night. She is wrong, she concludes, lying in his arms afterward. She is wrong about it all. The lip balm means nothing. Maybe Noelle bought herself fruity lip balms. Maybe her whole house was full of fruity lip balms. The fact that Poppy looked like Ellie was also neither here nor there. People looked like people. That was a simple matter of fact. And maybe SJ had imagined Noelle's flat stomach. And this man right here with his lovely jumpers and his gentle touch. This man who sends her smiley face emojis and cannot live without her. Why would he have invited her into his life if he was somehow involved in Ellie's disappearance? It makes no sense at all. She falls asleep in the crook of his arm, her hands entwined with his, feeling safe. I love you, Laurel Mac. She thinks she hears him whisper in the middle of the night. I love you so much. The uncertainty returns the following morning. She is the first up, and the house ticks and creaks as all Victorian houses tick and creak. The kitchen is filled with cold white morning light, and last night's candles and background music are a distant memory. She quickly makes two cups of coffee and takes them upstairs to the warm cocoon of Floyd's bedroom. I have to go somewhere today, he says. Somewhere, she says. That sounds mysterious. He smiles and pulls her to him. They sit up side by side in the bed, their feet and ankles entwined. Not really, he says. I'm meeting my financial advisor. On a Saturday? He shrugs. I always see him on a Saturday. I don't know why, but I'll only be a couple of hours. I wondered if maybe you'd be able to stay here and sit with Poppy while I'm gone. I'd love to, she says, and they drink their coffee. From upstairs, they hear the sound of Poppy rising. They hear her footsteps on the stairs and then her knocking on the bedroom door. Laurel pulls Floyd's dressing gown tighter across her breasts, and Floyd calls out for her to come in. Poppy runs in and throws herself between them, right onto the sex-scorched bedsheets, against the pillows that Laurel had gripped last night and buried her face into. Poppy rests her head against Floyd's shoulder, and then she finds Laurel's hand and grabs it, and Laurel feels oddly wrong, braless and unwashed, holding the hand of a young girl inside this nest of adult yearnings. I'm popping out later. Laurel's going to stay with you, says Floyd.
Yay!
Says Poppy.
Let's go somewhere.
She presses her face against Laurel's shoulder now, and Laurel nods and smiles and says, yes, that would be lovely. And as she says it, she drops a kiss onto the top of Poppy's head, the way she used to do with all her children when they were small. And there's a smell about her scalp, her hair, a smell that sends her reeling back in time. The smell of Ellie.
We'll go out for cake, she says,
a particular cafe coming immediately to mind.
We'll have fun.
The cafe is on the corner of Noel's Road. Laurel noticed it when she was here on Thursday. It's called the Corner Cafe, and it's been there forever. She's sure she once took the children there for tea when they were tiny, after a swimming lesson or a visit to the dentist. Poppy has a pecan and maple twist. Laurel has a granola bar. They share a pot of tea. Laurel glances at Poppy nervously. She's aware that she's horribly overstepping the boundaries of her relationship with Floyd by asking his daughter to collude with her behind his back like this. But her need to answer questions outweighs her sense of loyalty to Floyd.
Have you ever been here before?
Laurel opens. Poppy looks around her, over the rim of her oversized teacup.
Don't think so.
You know, Laurel says cautiously. You used to live on that street. She points over her shoulder.
Did I?
Yes. With your mum. Poppy glances up at her.
How do you know?
Laurel smiles tentatively. It's a very long story.
How's your pastry?
It's totally fantastic,
Poppy says.
Want to try some?
Yeah, says Laurel. Why not, thank you. She accepts the piece that Poppy tears off and passes her. You know, she continues carefully, I went in there the other day. She nods in the direction of Noelle's house.
Where?
To the house where you used to live. To talk to your... She drums her fingertips on the underneath of her chin and pretends to think hard.
Well, I suppose he's your cousin. My cousin? I don't have any cousins.
Well, yes, actually, you do.
You have tons of them.
Most of them live in Ireland.
No, they don't.
She looks defiantly at Laurel.
I promise you, I do not have any cousins.
That's definitely not true, says Laurel. There's two living in your mum's house, just there. Joshua and Sam.
They're in their early 20s. Joshua's at university studying history. He's really lovely, you'd like him.
Poppy glares at her.
Why have you been talking to them?
Oh, just one of those things. One of those great coincidences in life. Because it turns out that... Laurel draws in her breath and forces a smile.
I used to know your mum a long, long time ago. And when your dad told me that she'd disappeared, well, I was a bit curious. So I called her up on her old phone number, and this lovely boy answered the phone, and he invited me for tea. He doesn't know where your mum went either. He's just looking after her house for her until she comes back.
Poppy shudders.
I don't want her to come back.
No, says Laurel. No, I know you don't. But Joshua said,
she turns her smile up a few degrees,
that there's another cousin your age, called Clara. He said she's really funny and clever. He said you'd like her.
Clara,
says Poppy, her eyes brightening.
She's my cousin.
Apparently, says Laurel. And your mum's family all agree with you that your mother was a bit strange. But apparently, she had a sister who died when she was little. It sent her a little loopy. But it sounds like the rest of the family are really normal.
Her sister died,
Poppy repeats pensively.
That's really sad.
I know, Laurel replies. It is really sad.
But no excuse for being a horrible mum.
No, she agrees. No excuse at all.
Laurel allows a silence to fall, giving Poppy a chance to absorb it all.
What did you say he was called?
Joshua.
That's a nice name.
Yes, it's a very nice name.
Another silence follows. Laurel makes a great pretense of being absorbed by her granola bar, while her heart races with nerves about what she's about to do.
I've got his number, she says after a moment. I could call, see if he's about. Go and say hello.
Poppy looks up at her and says,
Do you think Dad would mind?
I don't know, she replies. Do you think he'll mind?
Poppy shrugs.
He might. But then...
Her face is set with a slightly staged resolve.
I don't have to tell him, do I? It's not like he tells me everything he does.
I don't want to be responsible for you lying to your father, Poppy.
But I wouldn't be lying, would I? I'll just tell him we went for tea. And that is true.
Yes, that is true.
And it's not as if he'll say, and did you do anything else? Is it?
It's unlikely.
And he might not even be there, my cousin.
No, he might not. But I could give him a call, just in case. Would you like me to do that?
Poppy nods, once. Laurel taps in his number and presses call. Poppy steps slow as they turn onto the front path.
Maybe we shouldn't, she says.
We don't have to. It's fine.
But before they have a chance to change their minds, the front door is pulled open and Joshua is standing there in a hoodie and jeans, another young man standing just behind in a fluorescent green T-shirt, and they're both saying,
Oh, my God, Poppy. Poppy, come in.
Come in out of the cold, my God, if it isn't little Poppy.
And things of that ilk. And Poppy turns briefly to Laurel, who smiles encouragingly at her. And they are both swept into the house on a wave of slightly manic hospitality and delight.
So, says Joshua, his hands in his pockets, bouncing up and down and beaming. So you're Poppy. Wow, sit down, Poppy. And Laurel, sit down, please. Tea? Coffee? Anything?
Poppy sits primly and shakes her head.
No, thank you,
she says.
We just had tea and cake.
And Sam and Joshua look at each other and hoot. And Joshua says,
An English cousin. We finally have an English cousin.
We already have a Canadian cousin. Two American cousins and a German cousin. And now we finally have an English one.
Wow.
And look at you. I can see my grandmother in you, so I can.
Poppy smiles grimly, slightly overwhelmed.
So, this used to be your house. Is that right?
Maybe,
she replies, looking around herself.
I can't remember.
We should give you a tour, wouldn't you say? What do you think?
Poppy glances again at Laurel, who nods, and they follow Joshua and Sam through the house. Poppy is uncharacteristically quiet at first, peering nervously around doorways. Joshua pushes a door at the top of the landing.
This must have been your room. Look, it still has the wallpaper.
Poppy falters for a moment on the threshold, and then she steps in, her eyes wide, her hands running across the wallpaper. It's pale grey with a repeated pattern of pink rabbits and green tortoises on it, engaged in a running competition. The tortoises are all wearing sweatbands, and the rabbits have on running shoes.
I remember this wallpaper,
she says breathlessly.
The hares. And the tortoises. I used to see them running in the night. I'd stare at them and then I'd shut my eyes and they'd be running. Hundreds of them. Through my dreams. I remember it, I really do.
You want to see some more?
Says Joshua, giving Laurel a knowing look.
There's another room downstairs. I wonder if you'll remember that, too.
Quietly they descend back to the ground floor, through the kitchen, and then down into the basement. Poppy stops once more on the threshold, grips the outside of the door with her fingertips. She gasps and says,
I don't want to go in there.
Oh, but it's fine, says Joshua. It's just a room.
But...
Her eyes are wide, and her breathing is audible.
I'm not allowed in there. My mum told me never to go in there.
Laurel touches her shoulder softly. Wow, that's an interesting memory. Why do you think that was?
I don't know,
says Poppy, sounding vaguely tearful.
I don't know. I just remember thinking there was a monster down there. A big, scary monster. But that's just silly, isn't it? There was no monster down there. Was there?
Did you have pets? Asks Laurel. When you were tiny. Do you remember having some hamsters? Poppy shakes her head slowly and walks out of the kitchen and toward the front door. Chapter 35 Laurel takes Poppy home after their visit to Noelle's house. They walk in silence for a while. Laurel has never known Poppy to be so quiet. Are you okay? She asks as they wait at a crossroads for the lights to change.
No, she says. I feel all weird.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know,
she shrugs.
Just remembering things I haven't remembered before. Thinking about my mum when I haven't thought about her for so long. Meeting cousins I didn't know I had. It's been a bit overwhelming.
Yes, says Laurel, cupping the crown of Poppy's head with her hand.
Yes, I bet it has.
Laurel swallows away the lump in her throat. She needs to stay focused. She cannot jump to fantastical conclusions. In the scheme of things, it is far more likely that the monster in Noelle's basement was actually 20 dead hamsters, not Ellie. She needs to assume that this was the case, and then find the evidence that it was not. She needs to stay sane. Floyd is there when they get back. Poppy starts to babble immediately about cake and tea and then disappears very quickly to her room before, she assumes, Floyd can ask her anything else. Laurel watches Floyd unpacking carrier bags of shopping. For a moment, as he reaches for a tall cupboard to slide in a box of tea bags, his shirt slips from the moorings of his waistband, flashing a slice of pale flesh, and she feels herself sliding back through time again. As she'd felt in Nando's the week before last, with Poppy. She's back in her own kitchen in Stroud Green. In front of her is Paul. He's wearing the same shirt. It tugs itself briefly from his waistband. He slides the tea bags into the cupboard. He turns to face her. He smiles. For a second, the two moments blend in her mind. The two men merge into one.
"Are you okay?"
Floyd asks. She shakes her head, once, to dislodge the glitch.
"Yes,"
she says. "I am. I'm fine."
"You looked like you were miles away."
She smiles as widely as she can, but she suspects it is not wide at all. She knows she should say something about her visit to Noelle's house with Poppy, but she can't. And she can't ask him any of the questions she wants to ask him. Did you know that Sarah Jade claims to have seen Noelle at 8 months pregnant, without a bump? Do you never want to find out what happened to Noelle? Would you not like to find her? Do you never ask yourself questions about the strangeness of everything? Because then everything about them, about Floyd and Laurel, all of it would be squashed and remade, like a clay pot on a wheel. And it's such a lovely pot, and she's worked so hard in it, and so much depends on it staying exactly as it is.
"Tell me,"
she says, turning the conversation round 180 degrees, back to a place that nurtures intimacy and growth.
"Tell me about your first marriage. How was it? How did you and Kate meet?"
He smiles, as she'd known he would, and tells her a story about a beautiful young girl at a bus stop, totally out of his league in every way. A charmingly gauche conversation and an invitation to a party that turned out to be a rave in an abandoned car park. A lost night of neon lights and recreational drugs. A full moon. A fur coat. And at some point, Laurel zones out of the detail and fixates instead on the feeling of jealousy that seeps out from deep inside her. The dark, bleak stab of pain that, for a short while at least, overpowers her creeping sense of unease. That stops her asking questions. Laurel leaves the next morning. Floyd tries to persuade her to stay, tempts her with suggestions of gastropub Sunday lunches and riverside walks. But her mind is elsewhere. She can no longer force herself to stay focused on their romance. She needs to be alone. She'd parked her car in the next road down the day before because there was no space on Floyd Street. To get to it, she has to loop back onto the high street and then left again. Her eye is caught by a man standing outside the small branch of Tesco on the corner. He has a little black dog on a lead. He's tall, in his mid-twenties, Laurel guesses. He's wearing a huge parka with a fur-trimmed hood and dark jeans with trainers. He's extremely good-looking, rangy and eye-catching. But as she glances at him, Laurel realizes that it's not his good looks that have caught her eye. She realizes that she recognizes him, and it takes a moment for the details to slot into place and form a solid memory before it hits her. It's Theo. Theo Goodman. Ellie's boyfriend. She'd seen him briefly at Ellie's funeral back in October. He'd been somewhere toward the rear, talking with Ellie's old school friends. He'd looked sallow and hollowed out with grief. She remembers feeling surprised that he hadn't come to her during that day, that he hadn't offered his condolences, that he'd simply disappeared into the ether. She toys with the idea of crossing the street to say hello, but her head can't deal with small talk right now, and she decides to keep walking. She is about to turn away when a woman comes out of Tesco, holding two canvas bags full of groceries. She's a tall, blonde woman in a similar parka, baggy joggers, and black Ugg boots, a green bobble hat on her head and a wide smile on her face. She hands one bag to Theo, and then stops to pet the small dog, who seems overjoyed to see her. Then they go on their way, the lovely young couple and their dog. And it is only then that Laurel really registers what she has just seen. It was a smile that threw her. She hasn't seen Hannah smile for so long. She'd forgotten what it looked like. Part 4 Chapter 36 Then Noel Donnelly's house was small and tidy, and smelled exactly like Noel Donnelly.
"Let me get you a squash," said Noel in the hallway. "You go and sit down."
She gestured into the small front room. Ellie peered through the door into the room and then smiled politely.
"I think I'd better not stay," she said. "I've got loads and loads of work to do."
"Nonsense," said Noel. "You can spare 2 minutes. Besides, it'll take me that long to unearth the thing. You might as well take a seat and have a drink. Orange or elderflower?"
Ellie smiled stiffly. She was in a corner.
"Elderflower," she said. "Please."
"Thank you."
Noel smiled at her strangely.
"Yes," she said. "Elderflower."
"Of course."
"I'll be 1 minute."
"You sit down."
Ellie sidled into the living room and perched herself on the farthest edge of a brown leather sofa. The room was filled to its limits with houseplants and smelled earthy and slightly sour. The wall around the fireplace was bare brick, and the hearth filled with sprays of dried flowers and some terracotta animals that looked as though Noel might have made them herself. Overhead was a bulb in a globular paper shade, and the windows were obscured by wooden Venetian blinds, one slat of which was missing, allowing a reassuring view of a strip of cherry blossom and sunshine. Ellie stared through the gap in the blinds, imagining the world beyond Noel Donnelly's front room.
"There you are," said Noel, placing a glass of squash in front of her. The squash looked nice. It was in a pretty glass, clear with green polka dots. She was thirsty.
Noel watched her as she lifted the glass and began to drink from it.
"Thank you,"
she said, putting down the almost empty glass. Noel glanced at the glass and then at Ellie.
"Oh, lovely girl. You are welcome.
Now, you wait there and I will get the papers and be back in a short minute."
She left the room, and Ellie heard her heavy steps ascending the stairs. "Like a baby elephant," as Ellie's mum would have said. Stamp, 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 stamp. She was unconscious before Noel had made it to the landing. Ellie heard a sound, a tiny woody squeak, a chair moving. Then she heard a breath.
"You're awake now, are you?" said Noel from somewhere in the dark.
"Now, listen. I really want to apologize to you. This is a terrible thing. A terrible thing I've done to you. Unforgivable, really. But I hope you'll see why. In time. I hope you'll understand."
In time.
Ellie struggled against the glue. Nothing moved.
"The effects will wear off soon. Or, well,"
Noel laughed. "At least I hope they do.
It said on the internet 3 to 12 hours, and you've been out for 12, so."
She laughed again, and Ellie thought, "It's 11 p.m. I've been away from home since 10 o'clock this morning. My mum." Her eyes had started to lose their heaviness, and she could make out parts of the room now. The cool glow of moonlight through a narrow window set high in a wood-clad wall. A toilet and sink in a recess behind a curtain. Empty shelves on a wall. A small wardrobe. And there, in front of a closed door, the outline of Noel Donnelly. Legs crossed, hands in her lap. Ellie tried again to lift her head, and this time managed to move it a millimeter or two.
Oh, there you go, said Noel. You're coming through it now. That's great. I'll just sit here with you for a while longer, and then when you're sitting up, I'll get you something to eat. You missed your lunch and your dinner, and you must be ravenous. What would you like? Maybe just a sandwich. I have some good ham. I'll do that for you. She stood then and picked up a cup from the table by the bed. Here. She angled a bendy straw toward Ellie's mouth. Drink some water. You must be parched. Ellie sucked at the straw and felt the tepid water spread across the dry towel of her tongue and the papery roof of her mouth.
My mum, she croaked. My mum.
Ah, now, don't you worry about your mum. She probably just thinks you're off canoodling somewhere with that boy of yours. It's a lovely evening, just like last night. Summery, you know, the sort of evening you want to go on for longer.
No, Ellie said through a parchment throat. She'll be scared. My mum.
And she felt it then, like a needle in her heart. The love her mother always talked about. You won't understand how much I love you until you're a mother yourself. But she felt it now, and all the pain in her heart was for her mother. Her mother, who she knew would be crying and worrying and feeling the meaning of her life slipping away from her. She couldn't bear it. She truly couldn't bear it. Of course she won't be scared. Don't be daft. Now, let's see if we can sit you up. Can you move your fingers now? Your toes? Your arms? Ah, yes. Here you go. Good girl. That's great. That really is. And then Noelle Donnelly's arms were around her waist, and she was being pulled gently up the bed. And she could see more now. She could see that she was in a room lower than ground level. Walls clad with dirty gold pine.
Where am I?
In the basement. Which makes it sound worse than it is. It's my guest room, really. Not that I ever have any guests. But I used to keep all my overspill in here. You know, bric-a-brac. But knowing you were coming, I had a good clear out. Took it all to the Red Cross shop. So now we're very minimal. There now. She adjusted the pillow behind Ellie's head. All comfy. I'll go and get you that sandwich. You just rest a bit. But don't try and get up. You might fall out of the bed and hurt yourself, being a bit woozy as you are. She smiled at her indulgently, like a kindly nurse. Good girl, she said, running her hand down Ellie's hair. Good girl. Then she turned and left the room. Ellie heard one lock click into place, and then she heard another, and then one more. Ellie didn't eat her sandwich. Despite the pain of an empty stomach, she wasn't at all hungry. Noelle silently removed it and said, Ah, well, I'm sure you'll be hungry in the morning. We'll try again then, eh? She looked fondly at Ellie and said, Oh, it is a treat to have you here. It really is. Now you sleep tight, and I'll see you bright and early.
I want to go home,
Ellie yelled out at Noelle's back.
I really want to go home.
Noelle didn't reply. The three locks clicked into place. The room turned black. Chapter 37. Then. The sun came up early. Ellie took the chair that Noelle had sat on the night before and pulled it across to the window. She climbed onto it and peered through the grimy glass. She saw a tangle of undergrowth, a brick wall painted cream, a water pipe streaked green. If she peered upward, she saw the pink clouds of the cherry blossom tree, the blue sky. Nothing more. She realized immediately that the only way anyone would see her in here would be if they were looking for her. And she wrote the words, help, and Ellie, into the dirt. She stood on the chair for more than an hour,
her face pressed up against the glass. Because people must be looking for her. They must be. She jumped down from the chair at the sound of the locks being turned on the door, and she picked it up with both hands. At the sight of Noelle in a green polo neck and faded jeans, a surge of horror and anger coursed through her, and she grabbed the chair hard and swung it at Noelle. It glanced off the side of Noelle's head, but she caught it before Ellie was able to properly hurt her with it, caught it and threw it across the room. Ellie jumped on her then, jumped on her back, her arms around Noelle's throat as she tried to bash her head against the wooden wall. But Noelle proved herself to be stronger than she looked, and manhandled Ellie backward and against the wall, where she strangled the breath out of her, strangled her to the point of lightheadedness and stars, and then let her fall to the floor.
"You cannot be doing things like that,"
Noelle said afterward, dropping Ellie on the sofa bed upside down, locking her ankles together with a plastic tie.
"We're in this together, you and me. We have to work as a team. I do not want to have to tie you up like a criminal. I really do not.
I have treats in mind for you. Lots of lovely things I want to do for you, to make this nicer. And I won't be able to give you the treats if you behave like this."
Ellie struggled against the cuffs around her ankles, pounded her feet against the end of the bed. She roared and thrashed, and Noelle stood and watched her, her arms folded, shaking her head slowly.
"Now, now, now," she said.
"This isn't going to work. The longer you behave like this, the worse it will be, and the longer you'll be here."
Ellie stilled at those words. So there was an end. Noelle had an end. Her muscles softened, and her breathing steadied.
"Good girl," Noelle said.
"Good girl.
If you can behave like this for the rest of the day, I'll bring you your first treat.
How about that?"
Ellie nodded, tears rolling down her cheeks. The treat was a chocolate bar. A big one. She ate it in 5 minutes.
Ellie thought of before.
She thought of eating toast and jam, calling Hannah a cow because she'd taken the last bag of salt and vinegar crisps that Ellie had mentally put aside for herself. She thought of filling her bag with books, a packet of ready salted crisps, and a banana. She thought of her dad off work with a summer cold, in his dressing gown, sticking his head down the stairs and saying,
"I'll go through that mass with you later on if you like."
And her smiling at her dad and saying, "Cool, see you later." She thought of leaving the house without turning back to look at it. She thought of her house. She cried. Chapter 38. Then. Another night passed. It was Saturday morning, and Ellie had just remembered that her period was due tomorrow.
"Good morning, dear girl,"
said Noelle, quickly relocking the door behind her and standing with her hands on her hips, appraising Ellie with an unsettling smile. Ellie jumped to her feet, and Noel backed away slightly, crossing her arms in front of her.
"Now," she said. "Now, remember what we said yesterday. I want no trouble from you."
"I'm not going to do anything," Ellie said. "I just needed to tell you something. Something important. I'm going to need some towels. Or something. My period is due to start tomorrow."
"Tomorrow?" Noelle narrowed her eyes.
"Yes. And I have really heavy periods. Really heavy. I'll need loads."
Noelle tutted and sighed, as though Ellie had somehow deliberately arranged to have a heavy period while being held prisoner in her cellar.
"Do you have a preferred brand?"
"No," said Ellie. "Anything will do as long as it's extra absorbent."
"Fine," she said. "I'll bring you some. And I suppose you'll be needing new underwear.
Deodorant, that kind of thing."
"Yes," said Ellie.
"That would be good."
And then she sat on her bed, on her hands, and she looked up at Noelle and asked,
"Why am I here?
Noelle smiled.
Well, as it happens, she said, I have a plan. A fabulous plan. I'm just waiting for a couple of things to slot into place.
She mimed an object slotting into place and laughed.
So you just be patient and all will be revealed.
Her eyes twinkled as she spoke.
Ellie wanted to bite her.
Is it on the news? She asked.
Oh, I dare say it is. I can't say that I've been looking.
She shrugged dismissively, as though the world taking an interest in a missing teenage girl was all a lot of silliness.
Anyway, I suppose I should be getting off to the shops. Stock up on all your bits and pieces.
Christ, you're going to bankrupt me, young lady, you really are. She turned to leave. Before she turned the handle, she looked back at Ellie and said,
I've got a lovely surprise for you. Later on.
A really lovely surprise.
Just you wait. You're going to love me.
She left with a light-hearted flourish. Ellie stared at the back of the door, listened to the three locks, heard Noelle's baby elephant footsteps up the stairs. Stamp, stamp, stamp. She took the chair to the window and stood on it, balanced on her tiptoes. She waited until she heard the front door slam shut, and then she began pounding at the glass, pounding so hard that her hands hurt. She pounded and she screamed.
Help me, help me, help me.
Then she pounded on the walls on either side of the room, the walls that must surely divide her from neighbours, neighbours who might, right now, be in their cellars, searching for batteries, maybe, or a bottle of wine. Ellie pounded on the walls and the window pane for over an hour. By the time she heard Noelle return from the shops, the sides of her hands were black and purple.
Are you ready?
Ellie sat up straight at the sound of her captor's voice behind the locked door.
Yes,
she replied.
Are you sitting on the bed? Like a good girl?
Yes.
Okay then. I'm coming in and my goodness me, do I have the best surprise for you. You are going to love me.
Ellie sat on her hands and watched the door with held breath.
Ta-da!
It took a moment for Ellie to fully understand what she was looking at. A small plastic box with metal bars, pink on the bottom, white on the top. A handle. In Noelle's other hand was a cardboard box, the type you might be given to take away a salad from a health food shop. Noelle took the plastic box to the table, across the room, and then returned with the cardboard box. She sat next to Ellie on the bed, and she pulled open the lid of the box, and there was a sudden blast of farm smell, of warm manure and damp straw. Noelle parted the straw with her long fingers and said,
Look at the little souls. Just look at them.
And there, peering up at Ellie, were two small animals with honey-coloured fur, black beads of eyes, two pairs of nervously twitching whiskers.
Hamsters, said Noelle triumphantly.
Look,
you said you always wanted hamsters. Remember? So I got you some.
Aren't they just the dearest little things you ever saw?
Look at their sweet little noses.
Look.
Ellie nodded. She had no idea how to react. None whatsoever. She had not said she wanted hamsters. She had in fact said that she had not ever wanted hamsters. She did not understand why Noelle had bought her hamsters.
Look, said Noelle, taking the box to the cage on the table and carefully unlocking the door. Let's put them in here. They must be fed up being scrunched up together in that box. And my goodness, they're not a cheap undertaking, these things. The animals themselves are virtually given away for free. But all the kit and caboodle. My word.
She picked one from the box and carefully freed it into the cage. Then she did the same with the other.
Now, you must name them, Ellie. Come and have a look at them and find them some nice names. No,
I'm not sure how you'll tell one from the other, to be honest.
They're identical. Come here. Come.
Ellie shrugged. Oh, come along now, Ellie. Noelle chided. You don't seem terribly excited. I thought you'd be jumping up and down at the sight of them.
How can you expect me to be excited about anything when you're doing what you're doing?
Noelle appraised her coolly. Oh, now, it's not so bad. You know, Ellie, it could be so much worse. I could be a man. I could be a big, sweaty man coming in here to do God knows what to you at all hours. I could keep you tied up all day. Or in a box under my bed. Christ, I read a book once about that. A married couple. Stole a girl from the side of the road and kept her under their bed for 20 years. Sweet Jesus. Just imagine. She clasped her throat gently. No, you've got it good here, missy. And now? She turned to the hamster cage. You have it even better. Now come along. Let's name these little monsters. Come along. Her voice had lost its sing-song tone and was hard and immovable. Ellie peered into the cage and stared at the two dots of fur. She did not care. Name them one and two for all she cared. Name them A and B. Come on. Two nice names for girls. Or I'll be taking them away and flushing them down the toilet. Ellie felt her breathing pitch and stall. A wash of lightheadedness. She let her thoughts loop violently back and forth inside her head, rush headlong into moments from the past, and grab blindly at things they found there. Her thoughts found a doll. It had pink hair and a gingham dress and huge pink cloth boots.
Trudy, she said.
Ha, said Noelle, tossing back her head.
I love it.
Then there was a girl at nursery school. So, so pretty. All the girls used to circle her and try to touch her ice blonde hair. Try to be her friend. Ellie had not thought of her in years. She was called Amy.
Amy,
she said, breathlessly. Noelle beamed. Oh, oh, that is superb. Trudy and Amy. Just perfect. Good girl. So, I'll keep you supplied with everything you need. All the straw and toys and nibbles and what have you. Your job will be to nurture them. You will need to keep them clean and loved and fed. She laughed. A little like I do for you. Do you see? I keep you clean and fed. You keep them clean and fed. A lovely little circle of caring we have here. She put her hand to Ellie's crown and caressed it. Oh dear, she said, quickly removing her hand. You're getting a little grim up the top here. You'll be needing a shampoo, I suppose. She sighed. I think I have one of those attachment things somewhere. Those things you put over the taps with a little shower head. I'll see if I can find it.
You know, Noelle, I'm missing my GCSEs.
Noelle tutted sympathetically. I know, lovely girl.
I know.
Terrible timing for you, and I'm sorry for that. But, you know, there's always next year. Next year. Ellie grabbed onto the concept. She saw herself, next year, at home, legs crossed, sitting on her bed. Notebooks spread around her, the sounds of her family floating through the walls and the floors, the sun picking out the sequins on her favourite cushion. She would be 1 year older, but she would be home. You know, Noelle was saying, I did see a little story in the papers today, about you. And you know what they're saying, Ellie? She looked at Ellie, sadly. They're saying that you've run away.
that you couldn't face the possibility of failing your exams because you are an overachiever. They're saying that you ran away from home because you were stressed, having a breakdown. Ellie felt a huge wash of anger pulse through her and then crashed to the pit of her stomach when she thought of the implications. No one had seen her walk down Stroud Green Road with Noel Donnelly. No one was following any Noel Donnelly-related leads. Everyone was flailing around with nonsense theories because they had nothing else to go on.
But, she began. But that's not true. I was enjoying my exams. I wasn't stressed about them at all.
I know, love. I know. I know what a tremendous student you are. But clearly other people don't know you as well as I know you.
Who said it? Who said I was stressed?
Well, it was your mother, I think. Yes, it was your mother. Ellie felt a wail of fury and injustice and grief building inside the walls of her chest. How could her mother think she'd run away? Her own mother. Her mother who knew her better, loved her better than anyone. How could she have just given up on her like this? Don't give it too much thought, dear girl. Just you focus on these two. She gestured at the hamster cage. Dear little Trudy and Amy. They'll take your mind off it all. I guarantee you. Noel left then, on the hunt for the shower attachment, and the room fell silent as her footsteps receded up the stairs. A moment later, the silence was broken by the metallic, round and round creak of the wheel turning in the hamster's cage. Ellie threw herself onto her bed and clamped her hands over her ears.
Chapter 39.
Well, obviously, I had to plan it a little bit. There were certain things I had to think of in advance. I cleared that room for a start. Had to make sure it was safe for her. No sharp objects, that kind of thing. And I bought in some nice juice for her, because I knew what sort of family they were. I knew they were all organic this and that. I knew she'd expect something nicer. She'd probably just take a sip and then leave the rest. Just like your Sarah Jade. Generation fussy. So I bought in the nice elderflower stuff for her. Then, of course, there was the drug. That was easy peasy. I've been prescribed the sleeping stuff before. I just needed to show up at the GP's looking dreadful and waffle on about insomnia. Thank you very much, Dr. Khan. So, you know, there was planning involved. But honestly, when I look back on it, I can't quite believe I did it. Can't quite believe what I was capable of. Especially the violence. Oh my goodness, the violence. I throttled that poor girl. Stood with my hands to her throat and squeezed and squeezed. I mean, she might have died. But on the whole, as the time passed by, I think we rubbed along together okay. Me and Ellie. Once she realized that we were a team. Once she knew that I did not want to hurt her. That she was safe with me. And giving her those animals was a masterstroke, I think. Oh my word, how she loved those animals. They gave her a purpose. Something to focus on. She was lovely with them. Maternal and caring. Just as I'd known she would be. It warmed my heart to watch her. What were they called now? Those first ones. I can't remember. But it turned out they weren't a pair of girls after all. No, they were not. So many came afterward. So many that it was impossible to keep track of them all. She knew their names, though. Even when there were cages full of them, she knew each and every one by name. She was amazing like that. Is it any wonder I was obsessed with her? Is it any wonder I did what I did? And yes, clearly I knew what I was doing. Of course there was a bigger picture. Of course there was. I had a truly audacious plan. And my goodness me, if I didn't go and pull it off.
Chapter 40. Then. The days had lost their structure, their edges, their middles. At first she'd been aware of the passing of time, had distinctly felt the shape of the hours and days moving by. Friday had felt like Friday, Saturday like Saturday. Monday had felt like the day she would be sitting her history and Spanish GCSEs. Tuesday had been the day she should have been taking her first maths paper. The weekend after had come and gone, and she'd still had a grip on it. It was next Monday. She'd been here for 11 days, then 12 days, then 13. It was her 16th birthday. She didn't tell Noelle. After 14 days, though, she lost count. She asked Noelle, "What day is it today?" And Noelle said, "It's Friday."
"What's the date?"
"It's the 10th,
I think. Although it might be the 9th. And it might be Thursday. Me and my daft, fuzzy head." It all spiraled away from her then. Her peg in the map of time was irretrievably lost. Noelle still brought her gifts. Fruit pastels, a sugar-topped donut, a packet of tiny pencil erasers in the shapes of animals, lipstick with glitter in it. She brought her things with the hamsters, too. Bags of straw and little toys and chews and biscuits.
"The babies," she called them. "How are the babies today?"
Then she'd take one out of its cage and hold it in the cylinder of her hand and stroke its tiny skull with a fingertip and make kissy noises at it and say, "Well, you are the prettiest little thing I ever did see. You truly are." And then sing it a song. Still, though, Noelle Donnelly would not tell Ellie why she was here or when she would be leaving. Still, she'd tantalize and tease and talk about her amazing plan and how everything was going to be just whoopity-doo, just you wait and see. Ellie still carried around the raw wound in the pit of her belly, the place where her mother lived. Constantly, she pictured her mother alone at home, touching Ellie's things, lying down with her face pressed against Ellie's pillow, circling an empty trolley around the supermarket, black-faced and wondering why her perfect girl, because Laurel had always made it abundantly clear to Ellie that she perceived her as such, had gone and left them. She'd picture Hannah, too, her infuriating big sister, always trying to pinch brownie points from her, always snatching back little chunks of Ellie's glory with barb comments that she didn't even mean. How would she be feeling now, now that Ellie was gone and she had no one left to play out her childish power struggle with? She would be hurting. She would be blaming herself. Ellie wanted to reach through the walls of this house and into hers, place her arms around her sister's body, and hold her tight and say, "I know you love me. I know you do. Please don't blame yourself." And her father? She couldn't think about her father. Every time he came to mind, she saw him in his bathrobe, with bed hair. She saw the softness of his morning stubble, his bare feet, his hand reaching up to pluck the coffee jug from the shelf in the kitchen. That was how her father existed now to her, trapped in an amber tomb in his bathrobe. And Jake? She saw Jake as a free spirit. She saw him when he was a young boy, in the garden, playing football, slouching to school in his oversized blazer, a weighty school bag slung across his small boy body, picking up his pace at the sight of his friends up ahead. And it was surprising to Ellie how little she thought about Theo during those first few days of captivity. Before Noelle had taken her, she thought about him virtually every living moment of every living day. but now her family had taken center stage. She missed Theo, but she needed her family. Ached for them. Curled herself into a ball with her hands pressed hard into her stomach, and cried for them. Ellie's days were longer than 24 hours. Each hour felt like 24 hours. Each minute felt like 30. Dark came late at this time of year, and the sun rose early, and the time in between was spent in a violent swirl of dreams and nightmares, twisted bedsheets and sweat-drenched pillows. "I want to go home," she said to Noelle one morning when she came to deliver her breakfast. "I know you do. I know." Noelle squeezed Ellie's shoulder. "And I'm sorry about all this. I truly am. I'm trying to make this as nice for you as I possibly can. You can see, can't you? You can see the effort I'm making. The money I'm spending. You know, I'm going without myself to pay for you. But if you let me go home, you wouldn't have to pay for me. You could just go somewhere."